Good afternoon, St. Louis. DGS on KMOX. Happy Tuesday to you. Thank you guys for filling in for me yesterday. Went to KU to move Phoebe back home. It's weird. It's been a year. That's crazy.
Yeah, it goes fast, doesn't it?
Really does.
Yeah.
Just nuts.
They're done in this early in the year?
Oh, yeah.
Officially Friday, but she finished like a few days early.
I guess that's
But they go back like literally like I think her first day of class in the fall is August 12th.
Yeah, they go back. Yeah, the school years, at least in college, they start super early.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
And end super early, which is, you know, great. Whatever. I mean, you have more of the good months.
Yeah. It's weird. Like I have, you know, I visited half a dozen times during the year. So I knew where she lived and I knew her friends. And I knew all the stuff. But then when you spend like 3 hours there, and you see how they were living.
Yeah.
I mean, there's four girls. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine what the boys look like.
Oh, man.
Holy hell.
Yeah. Yeah. So you said earlier, I asked you this specifically because I said I have only like one or two complaints about my kid for her entire life. And like never got in trouble, good grades, the whole deal. But for God's sake, when it was time to move back for the summer, she never did a damn thing packing or getting ready until I showed up.
You know whose fault you'd say that is?
Yeah, it's mine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I don't know, maybe I just didn't yell enough. Maybe.
You're right.
I don't know.
You and me both.
But either way, it was like, okay, you know.
That's hard to believe.
But like, that's my biggest complaint.
No,
like,
kidding.
I know, isn't it?
It is.
It is. It is.
So
it's weird.
Would you help her pack when you finally showed
up? Mostly, no. I would be like, I'm going to be sitting on the couch. You tell me when you need me to move something because you're supposed to have done this already. So.
Uh-huh. Good for you.
The problem is it makes my day longer, though, because I'm sure you did it. You did the one-day turnaround, right?
Yeah.
So what's that door-to-door? Like
4 hours.
So 4 hours there, 4 hours back,
yes,
and
sir.
What? How many, like, 3 hours?
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about an 11-hour day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I had an 8-hour drive to Alabama, so I would drive the night before, you know, sleep in a hotel, and then we got to do the 8 hours after the moves.
Yeah.
Mm. Needless to say, Dad wasn't happy with the extra time.
She took us to lunch at one of the cafeterias.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure it's called something different than that, but I'm old. But look, if you have a kid going to college, do not buy the cheapest food plan possible.
Yeah.
Unless you have a boy who eats a ton.
Yeah.
She left hundreds of dollars on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just didn't. So we went and bought everything on the menu.
Right, right.
And then just sat there looking at
like
it.
Like wrapping it in napkins to take it home.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, you always see like videos of kids, they get to the end of their meal plan and then they just go buy as many bags of chips and like bottles of Gatorade as they can.
Yeah, I had the exact opposite problem. Although it was done differently then. It was just a number of meals per week that you could get.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like an account where it was like they took money off of it as you went. So a little different. But yeah, we were always like, where can we get extra food this week?
I know that if you take it seriously, college is work. But modern day college is also just a dream.
Mm.
It is a dream. Yeah. You know, just especially if you're not taking out loans, you know? I mean, if you're just someone's taking care of you.
Yeah.
It's a cruise ship.
Yeah.
It's what it is.
In that scenario,
I don't doubt that you have to work in class, especially if you take it really seriously. But just the accoutrement. Oh, my Lord.
Oh, it's you know what it is? It's there'll never be another situation where you are, depending on the school you go to, you are surrounded by 25,000 people who are maybe a year or two older or younger than you.
Right.
You're all within 4 years of each other.
Right.
When Nick lived in his apartment at Mizzou, and it was really nice. I think it's called The Den. And I told him, like, you're going to be 38 before you live like this again. And it's pretty much turning out that way.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that, like, I was, when we were doing the tours, because Alabama's all, everything's new, dorms are new, everything's, they've been spending so much money there over the years. But when we did that, whatever it is now, I don't know, 8 years ago, something like that, you're looking around, you're like, man, these dorms are like, they're like hotel rooms when you go on vacation and the cafeterias. And then I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, man, these kids. And I'm like, wait a minute. I was at Miami for 4 years. I really can't do the in my day thing.
No.
we had to walk around a beautiful pond with palm trees to get to class in my day.
You were fine.
Uphill both ways, but it was 85 and sunny in January.
It is less of a in my day and more of if you're going to go the fancy college route. Like I have a former student who is right now at Stanford and it looks like she's just living in paradise.
Yeah, it's
like
pretty
going
nice.
To the beach before classes. And of course the campus is the most gorgeous thing I've seen. And then someone else who goes, okay, I'm going to go to more, a commuter college. That's like the lunch pail, going to work, you know, and you're punching your timestamp. That is a different mindset as well. And I think they build, you know, different experiences, different skill sets, but I respect both.
Yeah. You got to go there, though, with, I mean, like, I don't know if you got to, but I know, like, as much fun as I had in college, I worked my ass off. Like, I had to work. I worked really hard. A lot of homework, a lot of stuff for classes because I had to maintain a certain GPA for scholarships. And then I was doing the baseball thing on top of all that stuff. I mean, I worked, but it was the most, the combination of 4 years of the most work and fun combined, you could imagine.
Can I tell you something? Other than my teenage years when I worked on the farm, I don't know that I've ever worked my ass off.
That's why it's still attached.
I'm just being honest.
Oh, yeah.
You feel that, Ron?
I feel like I worked the hardest when I was dragging the diamonds at the Granite City Park District. It's hot as hell out
that
there.
That is hard.
And then umpiring baseball at night.
That's hard work, too. That's mental abuse.
Yeah, that was tough.
You probably worked harder when you were a waiter. For real.
Oh, that's a hard job.
Well, I mean, that job I had, you could take it out on the patrons.
Well, that's true.
So that was a little bit different. But yeah, that is hard work because people are, I don't know if you know this or not, they are very demanding.
Difficult, aren't they?
Yeah. I need some ranch.
But even
okay,
if you have,
that's not enough ranch.
Even if you have good tables, like you have a like four tables and everybody at them is good, it's still chaos when it's busy.
Yeah.
Like it's nonstop. You'll go 5 hours and be like, what the hell? Where did that go?
When I worked at the university club at SIU, that's when I had to wear the brown tux.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know who made that decision, but it's exactly what it sounds like.
Somebody got a deal.
And I was a waiter, and they treated it like it was Capitol Grill, you know, because it was a lot of professors and things like that.
Okay.
And you know, it was like you had to act like you were really like upper crust.
Okay.
And then you'd get a 50 cent tip. I would walk away every day with like 10 bucks and then go take my brown tux off.
You know what? The only time I ever got really stressed out at a job was that serving job. There used to be this thing. I don't know if they still do it. It was called tall ships. And it would happen in Chicago. It happened like every 4 years and really tall, exactly what you're thinking. Ships with giant masts would come through. They'd raise the bridges. A lot of people would come in town for it. It was a whole thing. And I was working the day shift at the restaurant.
Oh.
And they didn't schedule anybody but me.
You're hammered the whole time.
He didn't know. And it was a huge room. I mean, for a restaurant, it was a big room and I had every table and they filled up. And at one point I'm standing at the computer. I'm shaking. And he's calling people like, I need you to get down here right now. And my buddy comes in. He's like, hey, buddy, you need anything? I'm like, I don't care what you do. Just go get a table and do something. People were leaving money at the table and going away.
Mm.
I got tipped out pretty well, but I was losing it. It was the most stressed I have ever been in my life at a job ever.
I work hard at this job. I work my ass off.
It's different.
It's not like when I was on the farm, on the corn crew.
Right.
Still proud of that.
Yeah. Did you guys call yourselves that, the corn crew?
Hell yeah. We're the first ones there. You come riding back at dawn on that big wagon piled full of corn.
Doesn't Andrew love corn?
Oh, yes. He does.
He's on the phone talking to someone about it right now.
About corn, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You're a corn guy?
You love corn, right?
Corn with a C?
Yeah.
Not the band, the food.
It's fantastic.
Because Dave was on the corn club.
Crew.
Yeah.
Get it right, Amy.
The club's for kids who can't make the crew.
I was on the corn club team.
Yeah, you got to graduate to the crew.
Can I tell you something? We're so good at this job. I just drove 8 hours trying to find anything the slightest bit interesting on the radio. Death. It was death. So I listened to about 3 hours of conservative radio and about 3 hours of NPR because I hit it in Columbia and Kansas. And it just, I am where I am. I just don't like any of you. I don't like either side. NPR needs to grow the F up and quit being babies. And the right, you're the meanest people I've ever seen in my life. You're
always
witches.
Angry. Always angry.
You're just pissed. God.
They're so mean.
Like, I don't fit in anywhere here.
We fit in on the corn crew, though.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I'm on the corn club.
Yes.
Crew.
You're not quite
Corn. You haven't graduated yet. Yeah. Club.
That's so true, though. I listened to a while back, like, I don't know, 45 minutes of very conservative podcast, and I was angry. I was upset. I'm like, that is upsetting. I am mad. That
you
is
see
terrible.
Why it works.
Yes, because I know better, and I was getting mm-hmm. worked up. Like, my blood was boiling.
And if you didn't know better, you'd be all in.
Absolutely. And then I listened to NPR, and I've historically loved them, but it's a little rough these days.
Mm.
Yeah.
I feel like every time I turn on NPR, it's like, you know, a very long produced segment about like Nebraska's fastest pig or whatever.
Good old days.
Yeah, that's what I like.
I would have paid $1 a mile for that.
That's the thing. I'm making it too interesting with the fastest pig, but it's always something that I'm just looking at the radio like, what? Why?
Everything is very, 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 very politicized. Like, you can't have a donut story without it just being awful. But they did, like, they used to have stories about, like, these nuns in Colorado that use llamas to protect their sheep from wolves. That was a good story.
Yeah. So,
I guess wolves don't like llamas.
I guess. I don't remember.
They're big and mean.
It sounds like the options are.
Natural enemies. They just never found out until now.
You can either be annoying or you can be mean. That's what it is
yeah,
now, right?
Yeah.
Unless you're Chris Ronji, and then you are both.
Both.
Yeah. Best of both worlds.
I think more people should have worked at Dick's Last Resort.
Yeah.
That's what I'll say.
Well, 122 DGS. Hello, if you are driving 8 hours looking for a show to listen to, we'll try not to disappoint you. That'd be too annoying or mean. You mentioned the cicadas on the break. Anyone got them yet?
Yes.
Do you?
I haven't seen any.
So
must be coming west to east or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mason Jar was cutting the grass, and he saw all this mulch. Like, oh, someone made a mess with mulch all over the sidewalk. So he went up to the sidewalk to brush off the mulch. It was not mulch. Mm. It was just layers of cicadas. Ugh, they're so gross.
You know, maybe the only thing weirder than trillions of cicadas out are knowing that there are trillions of cicadas 14 inches under the ground all the time.
Right.
And all assorted other bugs.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of them down there.
I also found out on NPR that you can, you can eat cicadas, obviously. Dogs eat them, birds eat them. But they're evidently like shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
That this guy was talking about how he... No. I think it was on KMOX, actually.
Total Information AM.
There you go.
Yes.
I got it mixed up. Where he sauteed them in butter and stuff and like... Well, why wouldn't we just eat them? I mean, people are hungry. There are going to be a trillion shrimp.
So to that point, it's so bizarre because he said it's like shrimp or lobster. If you have a shellfish allergy, you can't eat them. Don't eat them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
She's not lying.
Lobsters at the ground.
What if we made cicada cakes?
Well, they used to call the lobsters the bugs from the sea.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they fed
they
prisoners.
Were for poor people. Yep. Yeah. Lobster again.
Think about that.
Lobster, so good.
Used to feed it to prisoners.
Yeah.
Thinking it was gross.
Yep. Like, we'll make them eat this, and the prisoners are like, this is terrible.
Lobster's unbelievable.
Don't tell them. You know what makes it worse? Butter.
Don't put butter on it. God, if you couple this with steak, I'd just take myself out.
I'd have it for every meal.
Lobster?
Yeah,
it's good.
Chicken is 100 times better than lobster. I would eat a good grilled chicken 100 times over out of 100 times.
You're weird.
Yeah, speaking of fancy pants, why don't you ask this one over here how much you paid for her matcha?
Oh my gosh.
How much did you pay for
$9.
Matcha?
I paid $10.50 for a oat milk matcha latte yesterday.
Where'd you get
Starbucks?
That?
I don't want to say where it is because it's a local coffee shop.
Oh,
and
we
I don't
know where
wanna...
it was.
You don't want
no, you don't. It's it's not downstairs. I'll say that.
Okay.
But it was insane because I had went like last week and I had bought one in an iced tea for me and Dave and it was like $17
she
or something.
She was double
I was like, oh, they obviously double charged me. And I went back. Nope. $10.50. What kind of world are we living in, folks?
How big was it?
It was like maybe like 14 ounces.
That's not that big.
It was not worth it. I mean, it's a delicious matcha latte, but no. I'm not a billionaire. I can't sustain
this. So I know the cost of like filling up this, you know, a 32-ounce thing with like a soda or whatever. What's the cost of the coffee that goes into those drinks?
Oh, it couldn't have cost them more than like $1.50 at the very most. Because you just need some matcha powder and some oat milk And I think that's all that goes into it.
I did watch something about coffee and down the road years from now. I don't know how long into the future, but they think it's going to be a lot. The climate is changing enough that where it grows is not it's not going to be sustainable, so that at some point we're going to have to dilute coffee with something else in order to, you know, stretch it out, because coffee is, it needs a very particular kind of environment, and those environments are going away.
Which would you rather see go away, coffee or chocolate?
Chocolate in a minute. Yeah, I love coffee.
Coffee for sure.
Yeah,
I
don't even buy chocolate.
I'm going to drink that garbage.
We can think of something else that will taste like chocolate. You can eat cake with just vanilla cake is great. Coffee, you have to have coffee.
Yeah.
Coffee
well, by that, yeah, by that logic, you just put caffeine in anything and you're getting, there you go, you got coffee.
No, it's not the same.
Yeah, not the same.
Taste.
It is
the
same.
You're right. You're right, Rachel. It wouldn't be $10.50. It just wouldn't
feel
right.
Well, that's not a coffee. That's a rip-off matcha latte.
Speaking of mean, these two, I was...
Oh, which two?
Oh, no, me and Andrew.
These two.
Okay.
I was literally one bite into my KFC Chicken Little, and they are screaming at each other.
It was ridiculous.
We're not really, we're just both loud, so it's like level four, but it sounds like level eight.
It gets a little aggressive sounding.
But it goes fast. We're like dragsters.
We spend a lot of time with each other.
Yeah, we're like drag racers. You take off, you hit the gas, and go.
I trust the subject matter was important.
It actually was.
Oh, it was?
It is actually serious.
We'll do it when we come back.
Yeah.
You'll get to see him yell. It'll take 5 seconds. So.
Can't wait.
134 DGS. Update on the Trump trial today. Stormy Daniels testified to spanking the former president.
For the magazine, right?
We got that going for us. Mm. He was being a naughty boy, and he rolled up a magazine and looked at her coquettishly, and she said, turn around.
If you can place bets on anything, do you think they have bets on what magazine it was?
It was Reader's Digest.
A little one? It was little?
But real thick.
It was Cat Fancy.
there's no magazine you can name that's not funny and dirty.
Runner's World.
Good.
See?
That Fortune.
Tiger Beat.
Rachel.
Sorry.
Yikes.
Better Homes and Gardens.
Ew.
I want you to take this John Stamos. Teach me a lesson.
They say you're not supposed to take the highlights out of the doctor's office.
Yes,
highlights. I was
exactly thinking highlights.
Let's find out who's useless. Let's find out who's gallant.
Probably was highlights.
Out of the doctor's
office.
We're
going to get a call like you are being so disrespectful.
Yeah. To who?
The one who rolled up a magazine.
Right. Also, not the one with a porn star while your wife is pregnant. Not me.
Okay, so the 8-second fight that these two ninnies had was about a very important topic. We're talking about what's going on in Gaza and the complexities of allegations of anti-Semitism, and how you can not be a fan of the way that Israel has waged this war, however, still supportive of Israel as a state. And then it turned into the protests, and somehow masks came up.
Yeah.
That the kids who were protesting wearing masks, and Wheels was taking the position that you don't really believe in your cause if you're wearing a mask, show your face. Andrew, after about 18 seconds of clearing his mouth of chicken, then he went in pretty hard.
Yeah, I mean, so when is the last time in history the people covering their faces were correct on a protest issue?
I think a lot of protests use masks.
No,
it's about retaliation, Kevin.
I get it, but that would have been
your shame.
This is what happened.
Yeah, this was the argument.
But like the point is, like, okay, so did people cover their faces during the civil rights movement because they were worried about repercussions from people that didn't want integration?
I think yes.
No, they didn't.
They were afraid of.
They did
attacked.
Not. Who covers their face when it comes to mass protests?
Yeah, I don't agree with you, man. I don't think it's about it. At first, I did, but after thinking about it, I don't believe that it's about, well, I know I'm right, so I'm proud of this. It's, I know people around me can be unreasonable, and I will be unfairly targeted by my job, my classmates, my friends, or anybody who doesn't agree with me. And knowing how volatile things are today, I think it's more about fear of that. I mean, you could
feel like... So that's the precise logic that somebody wearing a white Klan hood would say. I wear it because I don't want people unfairly.
It's not the same.
I agree. It's not the same cause.
Yeah, I don't. That's.
But if
bonkers.
You're not willing to put your face on it and your name on it, then you're afraid of something.
Yeah, we just told you who.
Yeah, I literally just told you what they're afraid of.
Right.
Yeah. They're afraid of repercussion by bad faith actors. It's an easy concept to get.
It is easy, but it's also very easy to do anything when you don't have to put your name or face on it. It's why people are so brave on the internet. Mm-hmm. If you are brave, you're willing to stand behind what you believe. If I believe in something, I will never hide from it or cover my face because I know it's worth standing up for.
So it would be worth it that you might get physically harmed by somebody someday.
Would I take that risk? Yes, I would.
Okay. Well, that's you.
If it was a cause that I truly believe.
No,
I'm truly shocked to find out that Kevin's the bravest man who's ever walked the earth.
No.
Shocked.
No.
I'm on Kevin's side.
Everybody that ever marched in a civil rights movement took that same risk, and they took the risk of being beaten right there by police officers with hoses and dogs. I mean,
so if they're not willing to take that risk of being beaten or retaliated against.
Because you're going to get beaten with the mask. On, whether they're going to get beaten, whether the mask is on or not, they're worried about future, like you said, maybe not getting a job, maybe not getting hired. You know what? If you are on the right side of history, then you have to take that stance. Not like, hey, I'll stand up for you as long as there are no consequences.
As long as there are no repercussions for me.
As long as there are no repercussions for me.
And as long as it's easy. I don't want to have to go anywhere where it's difficult. I don't want to have to go find my senator's office in my state and go there. I just want to do it where I live.
What's it, the act
where
of,
it's really easy.
The act of going there is difficult. It's not easy to just be there, especially knowing what the repercussions are.
What I'm saying is it's very convenient to protest essentially in your own backyard. You are where you live on campus. You are not going where the decision-making power is.
But they're protesting. They want these universities to stop giving money or divesting money with Israel.
They're protesting to the universities.
Yeah.
I understand, but what does that do to affect international policy? Do they think
that
the end game is people will be like, wow, the universities are divesting. We better stop.
Kevin, they're doing the thing that you're saying they're not doing.
Wait, are we talking about masks still, though?
Kevin has changed the subject
If we stay on the masks, if we stay on the masks, I agree. Take off the mask. If you're on the right side of history, if you are proud to stand with the people you're standing with, take off your mask. And you can't say, listen.
Does pride have to be part of the equation?
Listen, it's.
Well, why does that matter?
If you're not afraid to, because again, it's that
same
thing.
They are afraid.
But they are afraid.
They shouldn't be afraid.
Yeah, why? They absolutely should be afraid.
Then, okay, listen, you may not get hired.
They almost
ran
poor Ilhan Omar out of office just for criticizing Israel.
She's fine. They
and she was almost killed on numerous occasions. She's been attacked. She's been hunted. She's been every possible negative thing that can happen to someone.
And at the same time, and it's I want to make sure there's a clear differentiation. There are most of these protesters are very peaceful people who have good intentions. Okay? I'm not saying they're all bad. But there are on these campuses, there are Jewish students being chased and screamed at. There were people wearing the same clothing and the same materials with the Palestinian flag, and some of them even swinging or having like ISIS signs. I mean, if that stuff's happening, it's not okay. And so, I know that it's not most. I guarantee you it's a small percentage of people that's doing that.
Where do you draw that line? Fill in the blank for me. A protester loses their high ground when they what? What do you do? Where do you draw the line and go, you've lost your high ground?
Threaten somebody else.
Yeah, that's first.
Legally, we all know private property, that changes things. If you're on private property, the school gives you a while to protest, have your encampment. Once they say it's done, it's done. You don't have the right. Megan Green, once Wash U said, this is private property, we're cleaning up the encampment, she had no more right to be there than I do to set up a pro-life encampment on her front yard. That's legal. End of story. Then there's the time, place, manner. You have free speech to yell any number of things, good or bad. You have free speech to do that on the sidewalk. However, time, place, manner, you can't do it at 3 a.m. and be disruptive. You can't target a specific group of people as they walk by or get in their faces and be intimidating. And if your language is so severe, threatening, or pervasive and targeted at someone like a Jewish student getting to class, your free speech ends. That's crossing the line.
Yeah, so what I said was threatening or harassment.
Yep.
That's it. That's where my line is.
Yeah.
You all agree with that?
Which
is reasonable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard, again, because I listened to 8 hours of bad radio yesterday, I heard Michael Moore's take, and he said that he disagrees with Amy that way back when in the 30s, I guess it would have been, when the unions were first trying to unionize the car business, and they broke into one of the plants, and they held it for 40 days, and the cops were out there, and it was just a melee, and there was violence and death. And he said if they hadn't done that, we would not have unions today. And no one asked him, but I thought, well, then what about January 6th? Because I think January 6th was highly illegal.
Yep.
and just a black mark on our country. But if you're going to say it's okay to break into the GM plant and hold it for 44 days.
I would argue the difference is that workers were being taken advantage of then in a severe way. Whereas the people who stormed the Capitol, their entire premise was this government is the government is taking our democracy away from us because the rightful winner of this election is being removed from office, and that's not right.
If you believe that's more legit.
Yeah, but that's
these people
not.
Thought
but
they were saving the United States,
right? But it's nonsense because they weren't.
Yeah,
it's nonsense.
Yeah, the thing I think the reason that history will remember them differently is that what happened at the GM plant is based on truth and was really happening. And what happened in January 6th was...
outrageous lie.
And wait,
we talk to Major Garrett every week. And the title of his book is The Big Lie.
Yeah.
Because...
Oh, I know that.
They're not the same thing.
They believed it. That's what I'm saying. If you have people like the former president of the United States telling these people these things and trusted hugely influential cable news networks telling people these things, they genuinely believed it. And I will say, I don't know what Michael Moore's whole premise was, but to think that unions wouldn't exist if not for this one act, I mean, they were not the first and only people to take steps towards unionizing.
No, it was happening all across
the
world.
So there were going to be movements, yes. So,
yeah, I can't speak to he had to say. But I would say that between the two movements, one is ridiculous and one wasn't.
Welcome back, guys. 150 DGS. Just so you know, the argument ramped up on the break. Didn't go anywhere. No, it's good.
It kept going. It wasn't really yelly, though.
Let's switch to sports. And I think it was Kevin and Amy were both making a similar point that apropos of the Cardinals and the Blues, you can win boringly and we're cool. But if you lose boringly, we're not.
Yeah.
At least entertain us in your mediocrity.
Yeah, sometimes you can lose excitingly, like the Mark McGwire years, but you can't lose boringly.
I mean, it's entertainment. So, you know, yesterday, I'd be curious to see what you guys think, because Rach and Andrew and I talked about it, but it related to the Cardinals, because the Blues, they decided to keep Drew Bannister as the coach, and the reaction from Blues fans has basically been... okay. You know, like, he wasn't bad, but he's not exciting. It's not going to change anybody's perspective of the team going into next year. Nobody's going to get their hopes up because that's what you're doing. You're not exciting anybody.
But if they would have brought in an OG or...
if they were to have hired Montgomery, who just got let go, I mean, he's a big name. People would have been like, all right, there's a chance for change. And when you're looking at it, you're saying, what is the change? He was already there. We kind of saw that. Now, that doesn't mean they won't be good. It just means that as you're looking ahead, it's not exciting. And when you're talking about the Cardinals, one of the things I think fans would like to see is that the team feels the urgency that they do. But when your responses are always dull, boring, coach speak, front office speak, we just got to show up every day and keep on grinding. Nobody shows any anger and emotion. And think of your own relationships. If you don't show people how you feel, how long are they going to be your friends? How long are they going to be in a relationship with you if they never get to see how you actually feel?
I'm sorry, Ron. What kind of thing would you like to see them say?
I wouldn't mind somebody just losing it. Somebody mad. I mean, it won't change the players. This is not for the players. I want to be clear. It's to show the people that are your customer that you have the same sense of urgency that they do, because it's about that matching the energy level, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if the energy level of everybody on the inside is... yeah, you know, it's tough, but, you know, if you just show up tomorrow, that's all we can do. Like, that, all that's going to do is make your fans more angry.
It feels like indifference.
And it's not.
And
you know what?
And the only way that, to me, you can sell indifference is if as an organization, you absolutely, truly believe with 100% of your heart that you have put the team on the right path and the guy you've got is it. And you say, look, trust us. This in 1 year or 2 years or whatever, we're going to be right back to where we were 10 years ago. In that case, I can concede on that, but I don't feel like they're on that path.
Right. Nobody does.
It doesn't feel like that's what's happening. Now it feels like they thought they put together a pretty good roster, and it turns out it's not that good.
So I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. And obviously, he's one of the best. So it's hard to compare anything and anyone to Tony La Russa. But there would be times when things would be going bad where he would make himself the center of the story. He would lose it on Tony TV on the post game and go after somebody. There was the famous one. You remember, Ronge, when he got into it with Bernie Miklas on the post game TV press conference, and they stood up and they're getting at it. Like, there's a, and I'm not saying it's faked. I'm not saying that at all. But there are times when doing things like that changes the story, changes people's perception. And I'm not talking about any of this being the rah-rah, win one for the Gipper, oh my God, Skipper's mad, we better fight. And I'm not talking about anything as a message for the players. That's a separate thing. But I am talking about showing your fans something more than what they've been seeing for 2 years, at least from an attitude perspective.
Well, and I think with this signing of Drew Bannister, it's not a bad thing.
No, not at all.
But it has the same amount of emotional appeal as when the Cardinals in the offseason, we need pitching, we're going to do something, and we signed Lance Lynn. Okay, that's not a bad thing.
Fine.
Like, it's fine, but it's just fine. It is like khaki pants. Khaki pants are fine. No one's excited about khaki pants. And there's a saying, Jonathan Adler, the designer, said it, and it's stuck with me forever. I don't know what, if you can say the one word, so I'll say prostitute. He said, dress like a prostitute or dress like a hobo, but whatever you do, don't dress like a mid-level manager. And I feel like that's what we've got with the Cardinals and Blues.
Did you think you couldn't say hooker?
No, the other one.
Well, oh.
Wow.
You can say that one.
You can, but Amy can't.
Oh, Amy can.
It sounds better, though, with the alliteration.
Yeah, it does.
She hit hobo pretty hard.
Yeah, yeah. She really did. Leaned into that one.
Really stuck that B.
But I'm curious. I mean, do you guys think that that's an incorrect thing to look at it that way? That, hey, part of what we do as an entertainment organization.
Not all the entertainment's on the field.
Right.
No, and I agree with that idea more now than I did 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That I think it is. This is an entertainment product.
Right.
And you're not an idiot because you want your team to be entertaining, even in losing. If you want them to be fun in some way, and losing's not fun, but at least the personalities are there. That's what this is, a product that people watch on TV and listen to on the radio. It's supposed to be entertaining.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, guys. See